So this is the first day of the New Year retreat, 2016-2017. Weather practice. This time of year, the weather's strong. This place is always strong in some way. But just living with the weather as it changes each day, and sometimes uncomfortable, sometimes refreshing, sometimes wet, sometimes loud, sometimes scary. That's part of our practice. And we always ask ourselves how to do it. How is it related to this formal retreat practice? This listening practice that you're doing now. I think I'd like to just start by looking at some practical retreat things. Details that would probably be forgotten if I don't say them now. And you might have questions that come out of that. One is that, see there's some car parking spaces here next to the house. Please feel free to use them, but you might find there's more shade sometimes, so if you need to move a car or something, please feel free. I really like these details. It's the heart of our practice here, where to park your car. Oh yeah, sitting tops. There's still some sitting tops there. Please wear them. I'm trying not to force them on everybody. But at some point I may have to call in the prefect here. But we would like to make the sitting more formal. Not that it isn't formal, but I think you know what I mean. I'd like to make it more communal in that sense. And so it's there for you to use. So there you go. The Zendo during the day, pretty much from the work period on, it gets quite hot, so probably from then we'll close the windows, close the door. But at night, Caitlin, I know, is sleeping here. Anton does the early morning wake up. But at night, when there's nobody here, we can open the windows. We can also open the door if we close the screen in the evening, and then nothing will come in. Should come in. Okay. I wrote here, having wet underclothes when you're hot is very helpful. The rest I either can't read or it's of no importance. Oh, for the Zendo activities, there'll be a... This gong outside will be rung by the same person who does the morning wake up. And just to signal time to gather. But often you can't hear it, so just rely on being taking responsibility for your own time. Okay. Today we won't be doing interviews today. We're just going to sit together today. That's our practice, just to do it together before we get involved in individual interviews. For some of you, it's the best day of the retreat. But it's just nice to build up some kind of sitting energy again. And for a lot of, perhaps for most of us, this kind of concentrated, sustained sitting is something we don't do often. So we have to change gear. We have to just get into it again. It's a bit like sort of beginning to practice marathons again, or scales on an instrument or something. One's just got to sort of put in the time and to remind oneself, not in theory but in practice, how it is to sit together, to be quiet together, to sit even when one doesn't feel like it, to come to the Zendo on time just when one doesn't feel like it. That's already great Zen practice that we're doing when we just turn up. It's a great selflessness. And already people, it's clearly an experienced group of sitters. And it's wonderful, everyone's just falling into it. And in that way we support each other, help each other. Sometimes when we are struggling to remember why we are here, it helps to use something quite firm in our meditation practice. So instead of, one option of course is just to use the body and to use the breath. The other is occasionally to take something a bit more tangible as your focus of meditation, focus of attention. You could use a mantra, you could use a counting. And perhaps I'll just, for those that are not familiar with it, I'll just talk a little bit about that. So often, typically when one's either just dreaming or one's locked in a conversation about whether I'd locked the cat in the bathroom before I left home, or whether I hadn't, that sort of thing, or whether I'd paid my internet subscription, I'm going to go back and can't watch the cricket test or something. That sort of stuff, or why someone said this to me, or why I embarrassed myself in that way, or whatever it is. That stuff that happens. So typically we either get lost in a sort of dreamy waftiness, that's if you're lucky enough to be comfortable when you're sitting. If you're not, it tends to be perhaps more on the restless side, and how long till the bell, and how can I get out of this with dignity, and so on. So when you find yourself doing that, then you've found something, and you've paid attention. Already you will be back where you are. You might start off again on your tirade immediately, but just the paying of attention will have brought you back somehow. That's how attention works. You suddenly find yourself where you are. One thing that is helpful sometimes is to use counting. So you may count, say, on the out-breath just silently to yourself the number one, and then breathe in, just feel the in-breath, just do it as I'm talking now, out-breath, two, all the way out, in-breath, just feel the coolness of the air as you expand, three, just say it to yourselves as you breathe out, so on. No need to go longer than three. If you do, you're probably on automatic already. Just come back to one and just go to three and come back. You may also have a mantra that you like to use, or a prayer, or a word of some kind. It doesn't really matter. The heart of the practice, sitting practice, is the paying of attention, sort of full-bodied attention. Doesn't matter what mantra you have, what word you use. I always like to use a mantra that goes Om Ah Hung. So on the out-breath, first time it's Om, the one that everyone knows. Om. I breathe in. Ah. Breathe in. Om. Breathe in. Then I come back again. Om. Ah. Om. Not quite sure why I did that, but it comes from, there was a famous German Buddhist, the name of Lama Govinda, Anagarika Govinda, who, a famous scholar and explorer, he became a monk in the 1930s, I think, between the war, maybe even earlier, in Sri Lanka, I think it was. Became a monk there, one of the very first. And I think he was an academic at the time. He used to write lots of articles and translate it and so on. And then he met some Tibetan lamas and traveled widely in Tibet, learning the language, researching, meeting people, camping on wild mountainsides and besides lakes. Wrote a wonderful book called The Way of the White Clouds, which is a kind of travel book of his explorations in Tibet. And I mean, I think it was before the Second World War. It was really a time piece. Wonderfully written, insightful. And he actually came out to South Africa, because I know that Louis van Loon, who you probably know from the Buddhist Retreat Center in Ikopa, Louis met him in India after his travels in the 1960s at some stage, invited him out here. And the stupa, that ceremonial architecture at the Buddhist Retreat Center, was actually laid out by Lama Govinda in his sort of Tibetan robes, his wonderful sort of peaked caps, and he looked like something out of the Wizard of Oz. It's wonderful. and when I went to the States in 1982, I was given the chance of traveling and doing some retreats there. And one of the people that I went to meet was Lama Govinda, and he was living in the West Coast. He'd sort of moved over to a Zen style of practice by then, if practice is the right word. And just that year he'd donated his whole library, substantial library, rooms and rooms of it, to the Zen Center, San Francisco Zen Center, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. And he'd made this donation, moved into a little cottage with his wife. They were both elderly, and it was just one of the most wonderful meetings for me. I hitchhiked out and caught buses and all these things, and I had some gifts from South Africa, and I knocked on the door of this quite modest suburb north of the bay, and this little old man came to the door, wheeled himself on his wheelchair, and greeted me like he'd known me all my life. And it was so wonderful. And he made me sit next to him, and he held my hand. And I told him about South Africa, and I told him about this and about that. And he never told me anything at all. I just sort of gabbled on. And all the time holding my hands and looking right in my face, and like never using a long word. And there was no books in the house. There was nothing about Tibet anymore. It was just these two very ordinary old people just being enthusiastic about their life. Wonderful, wonderful. A rare meeting for me. So he gave me that mantra. It was one that he used. So I'll pass it on. I'm sure you've forgotten it already. Om Ah Hung. There's a whole book on it somewhere in the library here. Some esoteric connections, cosmic sort of correspondences of different parts of the body. And the sounds. But when I think of this practice, I often think of Lama Govinda, who of course died some time back now, of just this very simple attentiveness to what was in front of him. And it seemed to me like a life of practice was in front of me there. That was his gift. And he was clearly in some discomfort physically, but that didn't detract from his attentiveness to who he was meeting. And it strikes me that when we do this practice, we often have different models in our minds. And I'd just like to talk about that a bit. Perhaps I should start with the weather again. It's quite brown, the felt, it's dry, it's been hot and windy all day, every day, for the past month or so. Quite difficult. We found it quite difficult. We found ourselves getting quite grumpy and so complainy and tense. And then about 2 days ago, the rain just appeared. I think you were here, Sarah and Sia arrived, brought the rain with them, and we got terribly excited. We danced around outside. I came and I lit incense and said thank you. Oh, this practice is easy. Great. You know, joyful practice. But of course, I was only really happy when the rain was falling. The moment it stopped, I was back to my sort of grumbly self again. And I realized that there was nothing really free in my celebration of the rain. That I was just being led by conditions, as they say, being led by my ears, led by my nose, my eyes, my ears, and so on, they say in the texts. So as much as it felt that we were celebrating when things were good, by the same token, when things just weren't suiting us, or when we didn't like them, essentially, there was some kind of resistance, some kind of turning away, some kind of getting stuck in, as we say, like and dislike, some kind of getting bogged down. And one knows it for oneself. It seemed very clear to me. I just wasn't responding from my practice, as it were. I was enjoying the things that I liked. I was resisting the things I didn't like. So all the time there was some kind of measuring, some kind of lack of spontaneity, some kind of resistance. Everything was, do I like it or not? So, it's always being referred to me, my like, my dislike, my idea, my opinion. I'm caricaturing it in a way, but not always, not completely. There's some element of that all the time, of I wish this life wasn't like this, I wish it was like that. If it was like this, I'll dance and say thank you and say how wonderful it is. The rest of the time I'm sort of seeing if I can manipulate this to be more like that. And of course, life, as we all know by now, doesn't go like that. So what to do in that kind of situation? How does my practice relate to that kind of being stuck in like and dislike? And getting stuck in an idea of how my life should be. So that's the one question that comes up. I think it does for all of us in various ways at various times. One common response, if you're a meditating type, is to have a model of how practice should be, so that we say to ourselves, I've seen pictures of Thai monks or Burmese monks in walking gently down the street, being greeted by all the villagers and so on. And that's equanimity, that's peace, that's freedom. He's not swayed by conditions, he's not happy when it's good and he's not sad when it's bad. So we develop a kind of a model of the practice and say, that's what practice should be. But then, of course, we get caught just in something else. We find ourselves measuring ourselves against that. We're wanting to dance, and we say, oh, these, you know, Thai monks don't dance and do somersaults. Or we find ourselves getting angry or irritated, and we say to ourselves, oh, Thai monks don't, that's not the model of practice. So we lose spontaneity and we spend our time trying to present ourselves to the world and to ourselves as a kind of a caricature of practice. And it's not an uncommon model, just because looking at someone who seems peaceful looks such a relief that we think that's a way to go. But usually as we go on, we find that we can't really do it naturally, where there's a lot of internal unproductive conflict about it, and headmasterliness and finger wagging and disappointment in ourselves and all of that. Or idealizing other people or ideas of other people. So. And then there's a kind of a beat Zen model that is also something that pops up from time to time, where we read Jack Kerouac and we read early Gary Snyder and those sort of books, and that Zen is just about self-expression and doing what you like and being natural and spontaneous, and the whole world's a sort of a, the whole world's a haiku, and the whole world's a freedom of expression kind of model that we have. So spontaneity becomes the new model, let's say. So if I want to drink, I drink. If I want to dance, I dance. If I want to shout, I shout. If I want to turn my back at him. But the whole time I'm sort of trying to live up to an idea of what the practice is, an idea of how it should be. I want to be Ryokan. I want to write poems under the moon. So that becomes a model. So again, we're measuring our life against an idea, and inevitably some kind of tension and conflict is going to manifest itself. So what do we do? Do we follow the sort of peaceful monk model? Do we follow the Ryokan sort of drunken hermit model? What do we do? My suggestion is that when we come to this practice and we do retreat and we follow this form, we may begin to connect with ourselves. We begin to connect with each other. We begin to connect with the world that we live in its full range. The bits that are comfortable, the bits that are not comfortable, the weather that's comfortable, weather that's uncomfortable, our own sort of mental patterns and emotional patterns that are comfortable and some that are uncomfortable. We just begin to make that connection. And we do that in the context of great respect for each other, following the schedule, keeping the silence, supporting each other in a way. And that when we really do that, all models of practice drop away. All ideas of how practice should be begin to drop away. And the question is no longer, should I allow myself to be angry or should I stop myself being angry? That kind of question goes along with having ideas of how things should be. A much more spontaneous model develops, but one that's grounded in this intimacy of us connected with the world, us connected with each other. So it's not just me expressing myself spontaneously or me repressing myself because of some idea. It's just finding the connection that appears when we begin to pay attention in a spacious and intimate way. And then the questions of how practice should be just disappear. Not always, of course, they come and go, like everything. And we're quite willing to accept their coming and going. So, it's not a question of how I should be, how I ought to be, whether I should be better, all of that conversation. It's just coming back to stopping, opening out, and finding our life in that connectedness. And then our sitting and our walking and our chanting and bowing just becomes an expression of our life. And we respond to situations with in various ways, and that's just an expression of our life. We make mistakes, we shout at ourselves, we just step on. So we find that in when we're doing retreat, especially if we haven't done it for a while, we're commenting a lot on how things are going, how we're doing. But as we keep going, we find that voice of comment just and judgment just gets less fierce, less judgmental, less unkind. And it's not because we are following any idea of how it should be, but just because when we quieten that endlessly busy voice, what appears is you and me sitting together, me talking, you listening, a life of just unassailable clarity. And that's where our life comes from. It's from that basis that we form relationships with people. That basis that we work at our careers and develop our skills. It's from that basis that we take part in as citizens in a country and allow that to happen. It's not a question of what we should do or what we shouldn't do. But whatever comes out of this nobility and intimacy is our practice. So I hope we all find that, and we'll all lose it from time to time. And when we really pay attention, the losing and the finding all become part of this great practice. So I hope that's of some encouragement. Let you go and stretch your legs. Thank you very much.